the president of Mexico and myself have agreed to cancel our planned meeting scheduled for next week. Unless Mexico is going to treat the United States fairly, with respect, such a meeting would be fruitless, and I want to go a different route. We have no choice.
I think that this idea that the president and his top aides are waging war on the media is a strategy to make it clear that, in their view, you can only believe one person, and that's Donald Trump, and you can't believe any of these other sources of information.
Tillerson will have many empty seats to fill, as nearly as a half a dozen top-ranking officials at the State Department are stepping down.
The Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, the Undersecretary of State for Management, the Chief FOIA Officer, the Assistant Secretary of Consular Affairs, Director of Foreign Missions, and the Acting Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security. This is the State Department's entire senior administrative team, all departing all at once.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's January 27th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell and our final business day of the week. Lots to talk about coming up in the show. We'll check in with Rick Sini a little bit later on to talk about American Airlines' new basic economy just as they get ready to report earnings this morning. Also coming up, we'll bring in Paul Nolte for our regular Friday conversation about the economy. But right now, let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are up just a point this morning. The S&P is negative. The NASDAQ is up just a little bit as well. Crude oil is trading lower by almost a full percent, $53.32 a barrel. Some stories making news since you went to bed, probably. President Trump vowing to keep American jobs in the U.S. His labor secretary, though, it has been learned, has outsourced his company's technology department to the Philippines. A filing with the Labor Department shows that Andrew Pudster's company, CKE Restaurants, laid off about 20 workers from its help desk in 2010 and sent those jobs to an IT firm overseas. A spokesman says the company still uses that firm, a decision that contradicts Trump's anti-sourcing rhetoric and actions during his first week in office. Lots of discussion today about a possible tariff on Mexico, talk of a possible 20% tax on U.S. imports from Mexico, raising eyebrows in Asia, where exports to the U.S. drive growth in many economies. Japanese say they hope to soon hold talks on trade with the U.S. Finance minister there says Japan should thoroughly explain how Japanese companies have been contributing to American society, including creating jobs. President Trump's press secretary Spicer says that 20% tax, among several options to finance building that wall along the border with Mexico, no decision has been made. The Mexican president yesterday canceled his visit to the United States because he is flatly denying and rejecting that the country will pay for that wall. You heard Donald Trump there in the opening montage making it sound like it was a joint decision to cancel that meeting. Trump said he honestly didn't want to meet with him if they weren't going to talk about those things. The Mexican president is having none of it. The good folks over at the Tribune and others have been putting together some notes this morning and over the last 24 hours about what this might cost us, a possible import tax with Mexico. And they've picked a couple of things. First of all, the cost of the wall has been rumored to be anywhere from $15 to $25 billion, depending on what construction it is used, whether it's concrete or maybe a metal wall. They've picked avocados just as an idea. An avocado right now at a grocery store is about $3. A 20% tax on that would increase the price to about $3.60. That 60 cents could go to pay down the price of that wall, but Americans would have to buy between 20 and 25 billion avocados to do that. In 2014, as an example, the United States consumed just about 4 billion avocados, 85% of which were imported, many of them from Mexico. Just one way of pushing that cost off onto Mexico. In return, what really happens is that we as consumers will probably end up paying for that. At least that's one idea being floated out there today. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management with us this morning, as he is every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, sir.
So help us understand this. Just what would the impact be of a 20% import tax or tariff on Mexican goods?
Well, just as you alluded to, it's going to increase the cost of our goods here in the United States. And when we take a look at the trade with Mexico, certainly our one of our largest trading partners, where do all of those costs come in? A lot of it is in the auto sector. We do an awful lot with auto parts, et cetera, that get manufactured in Mexico. Ultimately, also, a lot of the automobiles get manufactured down there, brought back into the U.S. So unlike avocados, we might not have to buy as many cars to get that cost taken care of. But as you said, it's going to increase that cost to the consumer. So ultimately, who's paying for the wall will be the U.S. consumer.
Yeah.
And it's going to have an impact not just here in the United States, but around the world as people start looking at how we're handling our trade.
You know, a couple of other items, too, that we might buy more of than we would cars. For example, a tomato paste costs right now about $1.20 a can. That would go up to about $1.44. Some things like, let's look at maybe a refrigerator, about $1,600 for a real good LG refrigerator. That would go to about $2,000, all kinds of different stuff. Paul, help us understand that this notion that Mexico is, some country that we can bully around on this. And I use bully because it really does seem like that's what's happening. They have a lot that they can do to fire back, don't they?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, they do a fair amount of importing from the United States. They can also increase tariffs there as well, make it a little bit more difficult for us to do business with them. And again, as I alluded to, England is looking at this because they're as Brexit is coming closer to fruition early next year, Theresa May is in the United States looking to do a deal with Trump. And they will be trying to walk that narrow line between trying to make a trade deal with them for themselves, looking forward to how they're going to negotiate with the rest of Europe. So there's a lot of other implications, not just with the U.S. and Mexico trade, but trade from a lot of other partners around the world.
And, as you know, I saw a really interesting story in the last 24 hours. Mexico could, theoretically, they could join the Trans-Pacific Partnership or another partnership and take their business elsewhere, like with for China, for instance.
Oh, absolutely. And as I said, there are other implications. There are things that we haven't even considered yet. Again, those unintended consequences of a trade war. And again, other countries are looking at how we handle this. And what's, again, if you want to be really sarcastic about this, the art of the deal, there really hasn't been one. It's been, pretty much a take it or leave it, which gives Mexico very little negotiating room.
Paul Nolte with us from Kingsview Asset Management on our Friday morning business discussion on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, on a morning where we're learning that McDonald's Corporation has decided to sell off its Nordic operations. McDonald's is trading up just a tick this morning ahead of the opening bell. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks finished mixed on Thursday. The Dow inched farther into record territory, rising 32 points to 20,100. The broader S&P 500 index fell 1.5 points. The Nasdaq slid just over 1 point. New home sales fell 10.25% in December, but sales for all of 2016 were up more than 12%. Analysts say much of the growth rode on low mortgage rates and a steadily improving job market. Starbucks reports disappointing sales growth, blaming congestion in its stores for causing some customers to leave without buying anything. The popularity of Starbucks' mobile order and pay option, which was meant to simplify getting your order, has led to bottlenecks at the coffee pickup counters. And Yellowtail will run the very first Super Bowl wine ad in nearly 40 years, but not everyone will see it. Anheuser-Busch has exclusive alcohol ad rights for the big game, so Yellowtail purchased local ads in 70 TV markets. That'll cover about 85% of the country. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 521. It's our regular Friday conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, we haven't talked to each other since the big day this week. Let's wait. Do we have that? Hey, there it is. 20K, Paul. 20K.
Woohoo. I've got my hat on.
So this was sort of anticlimactic. It happened before the bell rang even. So what do you think?
Well, you know, it was an inevitability. Certainly we've seen the rally since the election that has continued on to the new year under the expectations of lower regulation, lower taxes that will flow through the bottom line, much higher corporate earnings, and then putting a multiple on that of 19 or 20 times what we're seeing today, we could see the markets still trade higher as we get through the first quarter of the year. So it's a nice number. It's a nice big round number. Let me just throw out a little bit of information. When we crossed 10,000, that was in 1999. So we didn't see 10,000 again for another 5 or 6 years. I'm not so sure that's going to be the case at 20,000, but 10,000 was a big hurdle to stay above.
There's this notion, too, that the Trump trade, I've heard both stories now, maybe coming back, maybe ending, maybe gaining strength. What is it? Do we see this continuing, and is there a place in the markets where we can really gauge that?
You know, you can take a look at a lot of the stocks that are going to be impacted by the Trump trade. and so a lot of the industrial stocks, the material stocks, as somebody has put it, the stuff that hurts when it hits your foot, those are typically the stocks, the companies that are thought of as Trump-friendly because of a much higher growth rate in the United States. And as far as, you know, can it continue? Yes, it's going to be uneven. It's not going to be a straight line. We've traded generally kind of sideways now over the last 5-6 weeks or so. As everybody digests, what now does the Trump administration really mean to the United States? So it's going to be fits and starts, and to a certain extent it's going to be dependent on what President Trump has to say today. So yesterday the worries now about Mexico and the trade war there, and today may be something completely different.
This has been a big week. It's going to continue to be another week coming of economic data and earnings. What are you seeing in earnings that you like, and what may concern you from what you've seen so far?
On the earnings side, we got big earnings yesterday from a lot of the big giants in the tech sector, Intel, Microsoft. Google missed a little bit, and that was due to some tax situations. In general, we're seeing better than expected earnings, but that's typical. Normally, you see about 60 to 63% of the companies come in above expectations. We're running at about that number right now. The part of the market that's going to be hurt, I think, in the short run at least, and has been over the last 6 months or so, is retail. For a variety of reasons, we've talked about the effect of Amazon, but we may also fold that into our earlier discussion about Mexico, with a lot of the retailers getting a lot of their goods from overseas, and a trade war there can boost those prices and hurt them further.
You mentioned earlier we're trying to figure out what President Trump is going to be for the economy. Is it still too soon for us to make that decision? Are you seeing something there that you like or concerns you?
Trade is certainly one of the big things that we see. One of the things that we take a look at from a very historical perspective is, again, legislation, what gets passed, what gets put into place. And if we go back over time, the percentage of the legislation that gets introduced by the president that ultimately gets passed is less than 10%. And it goes down to maybe 2 or 3%. But when you have a Republican Congress and a Republican president, or a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, you can get it up to about 7 to 8%. When you have opposition, it gets normally cut in half. So, yes, it is still very early days to see what the implications are going to be, to see exactly what gets passed and in what form does that all happen. So I would say we would have to reserve judgment until probably this time next year to say whether the early days of the Trump presidency have been a success for the U.S. economy.
Paul, is there anything out there in terms of stocks or investments that you like going into the weekend?
Well, as we talked about, technology is certainly an area where we're seeing both top-line growth, very good revenue growth that's translating to very good earnings growth. A lot of those companies are pretty inexpensive, Microsoft, Intel, Cisco, I mentioned earlier. That is a very good area for investment, and I think that one will continue on for a much longer period. I think energy is still going to be a, kind of a tough call with energy prices stuck in that $55 to $60 range. And then finally, as we alluded to, the industrial stocks, I think there will be some tailwind to that as Trump tries to work through some of his policies. But I think they will ultimately be some beneficiaries with the Trump presidency.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You remember, you can subscribe to Paul Nolte's weekly investment newsletter. Just go to kingsview.com at /WGN. That's kingsview.com/WGN. Paul, good to talk with you. Have a great weekend.
We'll see you next week.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. Tired of your young kids sitting, watching TV, or playing video games? There's a way to get them active. It looks a bit like an exercise bike for young children, and that's basically what it is, a stationary big wheel. It's a product by Fisher-Price. Tony Favorito is director of design.
This is Smart Cycle, and Smart Cycle is a bike for children 3 to 5 years old. Okay, so as they, this is all about active mind, active body.
There's a tablet holder on Smart Cycle, not so your kids can sit and watch TV while they work out. Smart Cycle can be hooked up to either a tablet or a TV so children can play games. Those games involve adventures that must be done on the bike.
By using the steering wheel, by using the pedals, by using the joystick, they're navigating their way through their tablet-based apps or with an Apple TV or Kindle.
It's a high-tech relaunch of a product from 10 years ago by Fisher-Price. The cost is $150. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:39. Some business news just into our market desk this morning. German prosecutors say they believe the former Volkswagen CEO knew of emissions cheating software earlier than he claims. There are lots of charges and investigations going on involving Volkswagen on this matter, but this is the news coming to us from the Associated Press in Berlin this morning. We'll keep you posted on that. It's another big day for earnings. Among those filing is American Airlines, coming soon before the opening bell. We thought we'd spend this Friday with Rick Cini of FairCompare.com. He's the founder and CEO of FairCompare from Dallas, talking a little bit about American's new basic economy class of tickets that have just come out. And Rick, good morning. First of all, welcome back to the show. This everybody seems to be kind of going nuts again over this. This is this basic economy, which is basically a seat. This is not something that's mandatory. It's something that you can select, right?
Well, yeah, definitely you can choose this particular fare. They'll have a much more expensive fare, which is the main cabin fare. But if you do buy this cheap fare, and by the way, this fare could be really cheap, like $40 round trip, $50 round trip on certain flights. It goes along with a whole pile of restrictions, starting off with you have to actually check your bag if you want a rollerboard, or you have to check it ahead of time. If you don't and you get to the gate, not only are you going to have it be checked for you, they're going to charge you a penalty for that. So essentially, you can only take a backpack that you can fend under the seat unless if you don't want to pay any bag fees at all. Then second of all, they're going to assign your seat at the last minute, and that's going to be in rows, you know, 31, 32, 33 of aircraft, typically a middle seat, by the way, and you have no choice there. They are going to give you coffee and water, not a problem there. But if you have in there, and the only exception to the seat assignment rules, if you have kids 12 and under, they're going to try to accommodate you together in that same row in the back.
So let's go through these. So if you're traveling like with a significant other or something, you're out of luck in terms of sitting together.
It's sort of potluck in the back rows. Essentially, you might be, sitting behind each other, one in the middle seat, for example.
And then the carry-on thing, no carry-on above the seat.
Exactly. So nothing in the overhead bin, which is essentially a rollerboard. So you have to slide it under the seat. And again, these are the baggage police. Are they going to be out or not for these tickets? Do you think flight attendants are going to be really happy to try to patrol this, or gate agents? We'll just have to see. The only time I've really seen baggage police out is the last couple of years has been during holiday season. And mostly they're out there trying to prevent people from taking 3 and 4 bags onto the aircraft.
Yeah. Just to be clear, the baggage police would be the flight attendants or the gate people. They're not actually
police
officer. Yeah, they do actually hire some outside contractors during the holiday season and sometimes to actually be at the thing and check the template and a variety of other things. But I fly a lot. I rarely see them.
So, Rick, how is this different or how is it like United's that they rolled out?
It's pretty much exactly the same. The only real difference is Delta, and Delta does let you actually put something above your head in the overhead bin for the same price. So the only real difference, they also have limited number of points that you get when you, as far as a qualifying for elite status, for example, and miles are slightly different as well because it's all based on revenue. So the cheaper tickets are going to give you less miles, of course.
Remind us again why airlines are going to these basic economy seats.
Yeah, it's simply to compete with Spirit Airlines, Frontier to some degree, and some other cities, Allegiant Airlines, and this ultra low cost model. And a lot of it's targeted at the last minute at business travelers who, especially smaller businesses that, you know, they see a ticket from Chicago to LA at $1,000 at the last minute on the legacy airline like American, but they see that same ticket for $300 or $400 on Spirit or Frontier. They gut it up and then they know all the fees and they pack light. And that's sort of been eating away at some of the margins for business travel, especially the ones for smaller businesses. If you're a consultant and your client's willing to pay $1,200 for your ticket, you're just going to buy that same ticket anyway.
So when you say $40 round trip, what kind of routes are we talking about with those?
Mostly on nonstop routes out of those cities. And if you look at Spirit Airlines, they have some tickets at $40, $50, $60 round trip. So out of Chicago, that would be a 2 to 2.5 hour trip to either the East Coast or the West Coast. And you're going to see those prices. Now, I will note there's going to be very limited number of tickets sold at these price points. So you can think of it as sort of like trying to redeem your points for a trip to Hawaii. Good luck trying to find that flight sometimes.
And so I remember when we were talking about United, it was just going to be on a few routes to start with. Is that the same with American?
Exactly the same with American. They're only going to do it on a few routes, specifically targeting those that overlap with Frontier and Spirit. And I think they'll assess how well the program's doing. Is it actually getting some people to fill in some seats that normally wouldn't? And remember, aircraft are extremely full right now. So this is a test program from all these airlines. We won't really know how effective they are probably for a couple quarters.
And again, folks, if you're buying an economy seat, you're not going to be thrown into one of these. You'll have to select it.
No, absolutely. You have to actually go in and say, hey, the main cabin seat's 240, the back cabin seat is 60. Which one do you want? And it should have a nice disclosure about all the different things. That's where I think, you know, it's sort of iffy as far as the rules on disclosure. What's going to happen and what's happened with Spirit and Frontier is when people first buy their tickets on Spirit and Frontier, especially on online travel agencies, they get to the airport and don't realize there's a bunch of extra hefty penalties because you didn't pre-book, for example, your check bag. You didn't actually bring your boarding pass correctly, and there's a bunch of fees. And until you take it that first time, you really don't know how it works.
Rick, we're seeing earnings. This is earnings week, earnings seasons. United Airlines reported a 40% drop in revenue over the last part of last year, and they say this year is not looking so hot. All of the airlines are pretty much coming out with these projections. It might be a turbulent year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of these weird years where we won't really know what's going to happen. Last week, they tried to do an airfare hike. It was it's in the middle of being rolled back at the moment. So I think, again, it's all tied to the economy. If we see a boom in the economy in the last couple quarters, then the airlines are going to do well. It also is tied to oil prices, so it depends on what happens with oil prices, at least their profitability. Their revenue is going to be something that's really tied to the economy, and one of the headwinds that they're going against is some of the cheaper ticket prices into Europe because of a variety of terrorism jitters and just general overcapacity into Europe, and those prices for consumers are going to be very cheap once in a lifetime, and at least in the last 10 years, to buy cheap tickets to Europe.
Well, as you monitor all of these prices and stuff, I mean, give us a sense of it. Are we going to see maybe by the mid-year, end of the year, 10% higher, 20% higher? Or is it even that far to put a number on it yet?
Oh, you're talking about single-digit percentages, 1, 2, or 3% either direction. So it's not going to be as high as 10 or 20%. The only way that could change ticket prices that dramatically is if we saw, for example, fuel prices go to $100 a barrel or something like that, where they'd try to pass that through. So essentially, we're talking a very small range. But for you as a consumer, that could be a huge range. The difference between going to L.A. and New York could be hundreds of dollars, for example.
Well, get us out of town, Rick. Where can we go that's nice and warm?
Yeah, so I was looking sort of in a time frame of mid-March time frame, sort of spring breakish time frame. And if you're wanting to head out West Coast, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, all under $170 round trip. Those are pretty nice deals. Orlando and Miami in South Florida and sort of Midwest Florida, Mid-East Florida, under 150. You have Cancun at 229 also, but not during spring break, but the week before and the week after. For spring break, it jumps up to 550. So if you haven't started shopping for spring break, just note that out of the Chicago area over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, itineraries have jumped 30%. Tuesday to Saturday, however, has only jumped 10%. So if you're trying to find a cheap flight, you need to be out there shopping and pick the right days.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Sini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow at FareCompare and at Rick Sini, S-E-A-N-E-Y.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 551 on the market desk, the WGN Associated Bank market desk. Dow futures are tepid this morning, up just about 5. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed ahead of the opening bell. Let's get the latest now on agriculture, commodities, our Friday conversation with Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. It's, my golly, the end of January already. Time is flying, and before you know it, we'll start paying more attention to weather in North America than we are in South America. But as I've always said, wintertime, we don't farm in North America. We go to farm meetings and outlook meetings and spend a lot more time watching South American weather because Brazil and Argentina, major competitors in the world market. And we're looking at soybeans at a two-week low this morning. The reason? Improving weather in South America.
I'm very concerned about what we're hearing about trade and international markets. The agriculture market is one of those that's really bracing for this potential trade war we're hearing with Mexico and China. How bad will this be, Orion?
Well, it's hard to know at this point because I think there's going to be some moderation on what we do in trade with our neighbors to the north and to the south. You know, the president talks about jobs and manufacturing. He never talks about agriculture. And agriculture has benefited a great deal from the NAFTA agreement and could benefit from Trans-Pacific, which, of course, is now out of the picture. The thing I'm interested in learning, as President Trump talks about bilateral agreements, how quickly will they get to work on bilateral? But a friend of mine on the trading floor at the Board of Trade a couple of decades ago said, negotiating agricultural trade agreements is like watching paint dry. It takes forever to get it done. So I guess the timeliness will be a factor, and what can we do on a bilateral that we can't do on a 12-nation such as Trans-Pacific Trade was. So it's difficult at this point to know, but again, the thing that I keep saying, China, which is our biggest buyer of soybeans, the one thing that country and its leadership cannot afford, they cannot afford hungry people. And so they're going to have to feed people in their country and to get some of the protein for human beings and for livestock is going to take American soybeans. So again, it's a wait and see, as one gentleman put it. He said, until we really know what the trade negotiators will do, hard to say what will be the outcome.
So if that's the case, Orion, why do we always hear that China will retaliate against us for tariffs on other goods with taking aim at soybean and corn if they need it so badly?
Well, that's, I've been saying, who is going to blink first on that one? Will it be us or will it be them? And, of course, when they retaliate with different products in different areas of trade. So, yeah, and that's a trade war. And, Steve, we don't like trade wars.
How much is the spat with Mexico going to impact agriculture?
It will have some impact on agriculture, but still there's pretty good movement of agricultural products back and forth across the border, whether it be cattle or whether it be grains and other products. So, again, here is a wait and see, because I'm not sure where Mexico would go to get what it's currently getting from the United States. This is, we've got a slew of meetings coming up. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association will be meeting next week About 5,000 cattlemen from across the country will be holding their annual meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, and no question, movement of cattle across the border between Mexico and the United States will be a topic of conversation and the overall outlook, because we're close to getting American beef into China. That's been a tough battle, but will that be impacted now if China says, well, you're not going to do this, we'll not take your beef? So
yeah, it might be kind of hard for those cows to climb that wall, too.
Well, you never know, though, because I keep coming back to this fascinating story in the past week. We shipped 4 million shell eggs to South Korea. Shell eggs. Normally, you know, they're processed eggs and that sort of thing. But with the lunar holiday coming up, they want shell eggs, and they have a major bird flu outbreak. It's taken a third of their laying flock. And so we had, I think, 4 jet air freighters haul shell eggs that are breakable to South Korea in time for the holiday.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
Will do. You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. This is the opening bell. As we close out, let's make sure we check the market outlook, sponsored by Associated Bank. This Friday, January 27th, the Commerce Department releases its December report on durable goods today. Also, the Bureau of Economic Analysis at the Commerce Department set to release gross domestic product for the fourth quarter of 2016. That's going to be the first of 3 estimates of how the U.S. economy performed in the October to December quarter. American Airlines will report today earnings. Chevron, Honeywell in there as well. Some of the big companies due to release their earnings for the fourth quarter. Also today, a crowdfunded legal challenge to determine whether Britain's departure from the European Union can be reversed is expected to be launched in Dublin. The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, has said she will invoke Article 50 at the EU-Lisbon Treaty at the end of March, triggering 2 years of formal divorce talks. Also, the Parliament is getting involved in that as well. On this day, it's also the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 1 fire that killed 3 astronauts at Cape Canaveral. Also, today's Holocaust Memorial Day.